This episode of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine was made possible by contributions from slaves like you. Spanky very much.
200 years ago, we fought a revolution in the name of certain beliefs of liberty, of justice for all, of self-rule and self-reliance. There are many in this country who feel we have not yet won that war. Terrorist acts, violent political theater, these have been a part of social dissent in this country since its inception. But why? Why here in this land of freedom? What's led men to such bloodshed in the name of their beliefs? Why in this era of national prosperity has the anti-government movement been at its peak? And what's that going to mean when the prosperity fades? Fewer and fewer of us are voting. More and more of us are joining the ranks of a resistance. How long are we going to continue to call these numbers insignificant? What do they have to teach us?
It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel fine.
Good morning, slaves, and welcome to another edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It, and I Feel Fine, the bête noire of the alternative news circuit.
You're too stupid to know what that word means.
Whoa, what the fuck, Amy? Where's this hostility coming from?
Dumbass. When I talk, people listen.
Yeah, no fucking shit. You're on NPR.
Keep talking and I will sue your ass for slander.
But I thought you were a fan of the show. She always seems so nice. Anyway, I am your host, Stimulator, and as the teeming pile of pissed off messages in my inbox can attest, me and my crew of submedia slaves recently took a month and a half long hiatus from the guerrilla task of producing bi-weekly riot porn mashups to pay a brief visit to our comrades at the Onestone camp, followed by some well-needed R&R. But while sipping mojitos in the balmy summertime sun has been a welcome change to the seemingly endless frozen fucking hellscape of winter here in Canada, in many other parts of the world, this summer has been a biblical clusterfuck of droughts, natural disasters, and record-breaking heat waves that have climate experts admitting that shit's even more fucked than they previously thought.
Only collapse of civilization prevents runaway climate change. Well, as it turns out, now we know that collapse of industrial civilization leads to abrupt climate change as well. So it's a double bind. We either turn off the heat engine, which causes very abrupt rise in global average temperature in a matter of a few days, or we keep the heat engine going and it causes that same rise in temperature in a few years.
With more and more scientists dropping their language of tough but necessary reforms in favor of full-scale fucking nihilism.
He believes in nothing.
He believes in nothing, Lebowski, nothing.
On July 20th, world-renowned climatologist James Hansen co-authored a report on a newly discovered feedback loop off the coast of Antarctica, which concluded that sea levels could rise 10 fucking times faster than previously expected, up to 10 feet by 2065.
Coastal cities would become dysfunctional. Parts of the city would still be above water. We would lose all the coastal cities in the world.
Today's forecast for you, hot!
Melting polar ice sheets and warming ocean temperatures are also wreaking serious fucking havoc on marine life, leading to historically unprecedented species migrations, most dramatically illustrated by the 35 fucking thousand walruses that scientists recently noticed gangsta-chilling off the coast of Alaska. And shit's not going much better on dry land. Take California, for instance, where the worst drought in over 1,000 fucking years has transformed much of the state into a barren wasteland, decimating food productions and creating the ideal conditions for fast-moving and uncontrollable wildfires.
Oh, you could feel the flames. It was hot. It was like you were locked in a sauna.
In my homeland of Borique, aka Puerto Rico, climate change added insult to injury, as the economically depressed U.S. colony has been hit with a mega drought. Water levels are so low that the government has been instituting water rationing on almost the entire population. Shit's also been brutal as fuck in India and Pakistan, where record-breaking heat waves have claimed over 4,000 lives to dehydration and heatstroke. Meanwhile, over in Iraq, peeps suffered through a week and a half of sustained 50-plus degree weather in July and August. That's over 120 degrees Fahrenheit, while facing electricity shortages that have helped spark massive protests against government corruption. And last but not least, earlier this month in the Iranian city of Bandar Mashar, it reached a fucking insane 73 degrees Celsius, or 165 degrees Fahrenheit on the heat index, the second highest temperature ever recorded anywhere
on Earth.
It's hot! Damn hot! Real hot! Hotter than this is my shorts, I can cook things in it!
Shit has also been heating up in Turkey, metaphorically speaking, following the tragic July 20th suicide bombing in Surak, which targeted an international brigade of communist and anarchist youth that were preparing to cross into Rojava to bring toys to the region's war-plagued children and aid in the reconstruction of Kobani, while this disgusting and cowardly act was ultimately claimed by the fascist fucking zealots of the so-called Islamic State, or ISIS.
If you want the killing to stop, you give us $10 million, change your name to Muhammad, and kill Justin Bieber.
Kurdish militants were quick to point much of the blame at Turkey's shit-eating president Tayyip Erdogan, who had long been backing up ISIS in their fight against the Syrian Kurdish defense forces of the YPG and the YPJ. The night of the bombing, protests erupted in major cities across Turkey, with minor clashes taking place across several neighborhoods in Istanbul. Despite an intense government clampdown on social media, these clashes intensified over the next 24 hours, and by nightfall on July 21st, armed demonstrations and Molotov attacks were taking place in Istanbul and cities across the country's Kurdish southeast. The next day, things ramped up further with the execution of two Turkish police officers who Kurdish militants claim have been complicit in the Surak bombing. Responding to this growing unrest, on July 23rd, Erdogan formally announced the launching of Turkey's very own war on terror. But it quickly became apparent that the main target of this war wasn't going to be ISIS, but members of the Kurdistan's Workers' Party, or PKK.
Erdogan's ideas and actions are not fair. He's in the process of organizing a massacre. And the massacre of Surak was just one example.
As those of you who watched my previous report on the Rojava Revolution, or who are otherwise up to speed with the complicated fucking politics of the Middle East, will know, the PKK are an armed Kurdish rebel group of Murray Bookchin-influenced commies who waged a bloody war of national liberation against the Turkish state from 1984, until signing on to a tentative ceasefire in 2012. So, by declaring open season on the PKK last month, Turkey's hamster-faced President Erdogan has effectively reignited a decades-long civil war, pretty much wiping his ass with the very peace process that he himself helped negotiate 3 years ago. Not surprisingly, violence has spiked sharply over the past 3 weeks, with hundreds of fighters killed in bombing raids on PKK positions. In northern Iraq and the mountains of southeast Turkey, dozens more killed in clashes with police, and thousands rounded up in mass arrests that have targeted members of Turkey's revolutionary left. And politicians from the official Kurdish opposition, the People's Democratic Party, or HDP. The PKK have responded to this wave of repression by killing dozens of Turkish state security forces, shooting down a military helicopter, and blowing up a fucking police station. On August 10th, two members of the Turkish Marxist group, the Revolutionary People's Liberation Party, Front, threw their hat into the fray, opening fire on the US consulate in Istanbul and engaging the Turkish police in a brief firefight. Most recently, popular assemblies in a number of Kurdish cities have voted to declare autonomy from the Turkish state, and peeps have set to work digging trenches and erecting barricades in preparation for the inevitable counterattacks from the Turkish military. To learn more about this extremely volatile and fluid situation, I caught up with El Cuchillo Anatoliano, a Turkish comrade currently based somewhere in Turtle Island. Hey, Cuchillo, how the fuck are you?
Pretty fucking on edge, actually, because of everything going on in Kurdistan since the past 2 weeks.
Many peeps in the West can find it confusing to keep track of all the fucking acronyms of the different groups in Greater Kurdistan and how they are related. Can you break it down for us?
A lot of people have, of course, heard about the PKK, which is the Kurdish Workers' Party. It's helpful to think of the PKK as kind of the umbrella organization, and both because of the historical significance it has as in launching the 30, 40-year-old most recent iteration of the Kurdish struggle, the HDP, which is a legal party, unlike the PKK, and that is a player within Turkish politics. And it is a little more than 2-year-old alliance between the Kurdish movement and a sizable chunk of the Turkish radical left, the YPG, which is the People's Defense Forces fighting in northern Syria, and the YPJ, which is the People's Defense Forces of Women, also in the same area of northern Syria called Rojava. Rojava means west in Kurdish, and when the Kurdish peoples talk about their territory, they talk about it in these cardinal directions where, for example, northern Kurdistan, which is within the Turkish borders, is called Bakur, which means north in Kurdish, and Rojava is called is the western northern Syrian Kurdish territory. The PYD is another acronym that people might have heard, which is the kind of Syrian equivalent to the PKK. It's the Democratic Unity Party, and that's the kind of more general political organizational form of the Kurds in northern Syria. The YDG-H, which is the Patriotic Revolutionary Youth Movement, which is a little more than 2-year-old formation, which is organized in almost all of the metropolitan areas of Turkey, and it's basically the kind of the youth wing of the PKK, very much so about fighting in the streets with the police, with Molotovs and guns and various other methods. And when you hear about Kurdish riots, especially the ones that have been happening for the past few weeks, which hopefully we can talk about a little bit more, this is definitely the YDGH who are pushing that.
For most of its existence, the PKK were influenced by old-school Marxist commies, but for the past decade they've been moving more towards an anarchist influence or libertarian philosophy. We've seen how this political shift has manifested in the areas of Rojava. How has this played out in Turkey?
Definitely there's no more desire for a nation state within the Kurdish movement. Whenever you talk to people in the region, there are some misconceptions as if the Kurds are fighting for the new nation state, and they're actually against the whole concept of a nation state. They have a critique of the nation state as in a form of domination of a bureaucratic hierarchy, which kind of kills this real movement coming from the people. There's an emphasis on ecology. There's an emphasis on self-governance and autonomy. And probably most importantly, they see the kind of the most basic unit of this self-governance as a commune. Another thing that is kind of the most, important aspect of the Kurdish movement that we're seeing right now is the emphasis on women's liberation. And when you look in Turkey right now, for example, there's a civil war going on since the bombing of Sturj. In towns across Kurdistan, the youth and the Kurdish people are rising up and fighting the police and declaring that they're autonomous and saying that from now on they don't recognize the government and they will govern themselves.
How did the movement around the defense of Gezi and occupation of Taksim Square in 2013 change the overall political situations in Turkey? And can you see any lingering effects of this movement on the resistance going on today?
The Gezi resistance and the occupation of the park and almost a month around that was definitely the most significant uprising and social movement in the non-Kurdish parts of Turkey. and it politicized a huge number of people who are still very active. But one thing that you hear very frequently is that people, especially in Western Turkey, got a very large dose of police brutality and tear gas, and you know, some of their friends were killed fighting with the police, and they kind of realized what the Kurds in southeastern Turkey had been going through for decades. And also, I have to say that the kind of media censorship that they witnessed, you know, they would be in the streets being tear gassed, and you would turn on the TV and there'd be some, you know, banal documentary about penguins or something like that. And seeing the media blackout also helped the people who were participating, you know, the kind of maybe more upwardly mobile Istanbul population, to realize that there must have been a media blackout about what was going on in Kurdistan as well. So it created this very tangible sense of empathy and solidarity. And you see that today when you see solidarity demos in Western Turkey with what's going on in the Kurdish territory. And of course, you know, the Gezi Park movement kind of advanced a new kind of anti-capitalist politics of public space, which has a very large potential to converge with the new Kurdish politics of autonomy. So this is, you know, the dream if the Gezi politics and the new kind of democratic confederalism of the Kurdish movement can become one and take hold across the country.
Thanks, Cuchillo. And that about it for this edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It, and I Feel Fine. Don't forget that to get the names of the tracks we played, to subscribe to our podcast or email list, or to watch one of the hundreds of videos that feature my foul fucking mouth, just visit my fucking website, stimulator.tv. This month, I want to send extra appreciation to the slaves who kept supporting submedia.tv while we took a break to avoid the ever-looming killer of comrades known as burnout. So, a taco supreme, woot woot, goes out to Anders, Justin, Monica, Garrett, Guillaume, Robin, Ranko, Noemi, Colleen, Colvin, Dera, Raul, Carlis, Blade, Steve, Breton, Jonathan, More Trees Record, Jane, Jan, Andrew, Bear, Jeffrey, Gabriel, Daniel, Justin, Joshua, Sebastian, Jason, Samantha, Andrew, Joseph, Marisol, Natalie, Michael, Kirk, Lydia, Justina, Willie, Jared, Renzo, Alexandra, Audrey, Harrison, Ricky, Julia, Sarah, Permadasi, Samantha, Jonathan, Steven, Shannon, Kyle, Christian, Miguel, Dylan, Francois, Jennifer, Benjamin, Claire, Jenny, Mallory, Dave, Raul, Alexander, Gavin, Kevin, Ian, and Benoit. Alcachofas. Stay tuned this fall for a steady stream of videos from submedia.tv and more updates from the global motherfucking insurrection. So long, compañeros. Bereke fakesi meneye azadiye wallat vaya ubedemeye ev yoş doja yekiti roşa bratiye yekiti 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 to zameya lehin 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 hafan lehin agri azadiye roşa va haydi pehin ev yoş doja habuniye